content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward for the North Carolina Reading Service. And this is the Week Magazine. From the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the July 3rd, 2026 issue of the Week. Our cover drawing this week, we have Donald Trump. He's standing about thigh deep in the now infamous reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Memorial. We can see the Lincoln Memorial in the background along with a couple of workmen. Looks like they're trying to scrape the bottom or something. Trump's looking none too happy. He has in his left hand a copy of the Iran deal. And in his right hand, a piece of that blue paint that's peeled off the bottom. There's algae all over both, as well as on his suit and his tie. The headline is Swamped: What an Algae-Filled Pool Reveals About the Trump Presidency. We'll get that on the controversy of the week. Start with the first main story. U.S. lifts oil sanctions on Iran amid chaotic talks. What happened? The U.S. this week removed sanctions on Iranian oil, even as peace talks between Washington and Tehran appear to descend into confusion, with the two sides issuing conflicting accounts of discussions on nuclear inspections and the unfreezing of billions in Iranian funds. An initial round of talks in Switzerland laid a very good foundation for a final peace deal, said Vice President J.D. Vance, who led the U.S. delegation. But the two sides soon sparred publicly over Iran's nuclear program, with Vance and President Trump saying Tehran had agreed to U.N. inspections of its damaged nuclear sites, while Iranians insisted they hadn't. "They know they're wrong," Trump said. "They told us inside." The two sides also disagreed over the fate of Iran's highly enriched uranium, which the preliminary agreement states will be diluted. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said his country will never back down from the right to enrich uranium. Trump shot back that he better watch his mouth or will take over the rest of the country. Citing productive talks, the U.S. waived long-standing sanctions on Iranian oil through August and cleared the way for Tehran to be paid in dollars, including by U.S. buyers. Iranian officials said steps had been taken toward the release of $24 billion in frozen Iranian assets. Vance said if assets were released, Iran would have to spend them on U.S. exports. But Iranian Foreign Minister spokesman Esmail Baghaei insisted Iran can spend any released funds freely. There were also sharp divisions over the Strait of Hormuz, where hundreds of ships were stranded during the conflict. Iran said it will charge fees to ships using the strait in exchange for unspecified services. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said that no country can charge fees for transiting an international waterway. In Washington, the Senate passed a resolution barring Trump from resuming the Iran war without congressional authorization, with four Republicans joining Democrats in a rare rebuke of the president. The vote came amid broad GOP skepticism about Trump's ceasefire deal, which has been widely criticized for ceding too much to Iran while achieving none of Trump's war aims. The administration acts like they want a deal much more than the Ayatollah regime, said Representative Don Bacon, Republican from Nebraska. It looks like weakness. What the columnist said: the sweeping rollback of U.S. oil sanctions reverses years of pressure designed to cripple Iran's economy, said Anik Bao in CNBC.com. The 60-day license issued by the Treasury Department will unlock the sale of 67 million barrels of Iranian crude floating in the strait, yielding a windfall of up to $9 billion for Tehran. And it reopens Iran's most important revenue stream. Sanctions are unlikely to return after 60 days, said Jonathan B. Last in The Bulwark. Once Iranian oil is in the international supply line, they have Trump over a barrel because he won't be able to impose curbs on Iranian exports without pushing oil prices up again. This is quite the turnaround for the Trump team, said Andrew Kaczynski and Jennifer Hansler in CNN.com. For years, Trump, Rubio, and Vance assailed deals that provided financial concessions to Iran, saying they would enrich a dangerous foe that fuels terror. That was their central indictment of former President Barack Obama's 2015 nuclear deal, which granted Iran sanctions relief and access to frozen assets. Now they're poised to hand the regime piles of dollar bills. And for what? Asked the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. Tehran has made no serious concession on nuclear matters. Lifting oil sanctions now will gut U.S. leverage and send cash flowing to the coffers of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Iran claims some of its frozen assets have already been released, possibly $6 billion that was being held in Qatar. Even if Tehran complies with the U.S. dictate that such cash be spent only on food and medicine, it frees up other funds for military purposes. Meanwhile, the preliminary deal signed by Trump treats our ally Israel as if it were a U.S. puppet with no sovereignty beyond that which America grants it, said Noah Rothman in National Review. By demanding a ceasefire in southern Lebanon, Iran has compelled America to tacitly take the side of the Iran-backed Hezbollah terrorists who used the region to strike at northern Israel, and all in the craven pursuit of a peace unworthy of the word. Negotiating with Iran has always been an extraordinary challenge, said David E. Sanger and Yaganeh Torbati in the New York Times. But it's even more complex under Trump. Instead of letting negotiators quietly work toward a full agreement, he likes to trumpet his preferred outcomes as fully negotiated side deals in a bid to force Iran's hand. The Iranians have their own spin strategy. Deny every claim, even if it contains an element of truth. Some posturing is par for the course, but at this level it raises the question of whether the sniping will ultimately sink the whole venture. Hanging over the negotiations is an uncomfortable question, said Aviva Klompas in USA Today. What exactly has the U.S. accomplished? The hardliners remain in power in Tehran. The fate of Iran's highly enriched uranium is unsettled. The Strait of Hormuz, where oil shipping was uncontested before the war, is now a bargaining chip. Iran has suffered enormous losses to its military and nuclear infrastructure, but if it is financially rewarded and retains its nuclear and ballistic missile programs, it's fair to ask whether Tehran has once again accomplished a tactic it has spent decades perfecting, losing the war while winning the negotiation. And the controversy of the week, going green, Trump's botched reflecting pool makeover. Good news, said Rex Hupke in USA Today. Donald Trump finally has a swamp to drain. After President I'm a Builder splashed $14 million on beautifying the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool for the nation's 250th birthday, the Washington landmark now resembles a fetid 300,000-square-foot bog. Green algae has taken over the pool and defied attempts by the Interior Department workers to kill it with hydrogen peroxide, which has succeeded only in peeling Trump's hand-picked American flag blue sealant off the pool's floor. The chemicals might also explain the dead duck spotted floating in a pool that is now a perfect metaphor for Trump's incompetence. Trump claimed without evidence on social media that radical left lunatics had vandalized the pool, said Rachel Kahn in the New Republic, and police have duly arrested a half dozen people who dared pluck pieces of sealant from its murk. But the more likely culprits are the companies Trump hired on no-bid contracts for the renovation. These include the aptly named Green Water Services, owned by Trump's friend and donor John J. Cafaro, who both looks like he was plucked right out of a cartoon about sleazy businessmen and is one, with a felony conviction for bribery. Fences have now been erected around the pool, and hope is fading that it will reopen by July the 4th. This was also predictable, said Sarah Kaplan in the Washington Post. The pool was refilled in early June with 6.5 million gallons of nutrient-loaded water from the tidal basin. The warm, sunny days that followed provided ideal conditions for the photosynthetic algae to multiply, and the high temperatures may have been exacerbated by the pool's new dark blue coating, which absorbs more heat than its previous gray finish. The pool has been algae-prone since its construction in 1923, said Nicole Russell in USA Today. President Barack Obama spent $34 million trying to and failing to stop the blooms, but I don't remember the media subjecting him to the same criticism, mockery, and disdain it has hurled at Trump. That's because the reflecting pool reflects Trump's hubris, said Hayes Brown in MS.Now. Whether he's renovating a pool or waging a war on Iran, the script never varies. He boasts he can easily solve some problem that bedeviled his stupid predecessors. He enlists donors, relatives, or Fox News hosts to manage the details, and when the project collapses, blames scapegoats and declares victory anyway. Trump has fixed the reflecting pool for good, a spokesperson gushed last week. He often starts with a glimmer of truth, said Maureen Dowd in the New York Times. The reflecting pool did need sprucing up, but Trump always goes overboard, egged on by sycophants and his own misplaced self-belief, and ends up making things work. Yet he endures, said Michael Tomasky in the New Republic. While we chuckle at the corruption behind the pool debacle, let's reflect that this is roughly the 10,362nd matter that, in any other administration, would be a huge scandal. That's why we're obsessed, said Jonathan V. Last in The Bulwark. Poolgate lets us pretend that we're back in normal scandalous territory, where corrupt politicians arrange eight-figure paydays for their cigar-chopping pals. But it's a lie. For every algae-choked pool, there's an attempted coup, an American citizen shot dead by ICE, or some other mortal sin to remind us that we are past the era of scandal and at a point far out there where the structures are failing. Here's our good week, bad week piece. It's a good week for fermentation after the Wall Street Journal reported that Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has persuaded male members of President Trump's inner circle to embrace a diet of grass-fed beef and sauerkraut. Kennedy's wife, actress Cheryl Hines, says he often asks her to carry his sauerkraut in her purse. And I'll say, I actually cannot. It's a good week for unconditional surrender after Massachusetts Governor Maury Healey, her state still under siege by Scotland's tartan army of World Cup soccer fans, signed an executive order legalizing haggis, the offal-heavy Scottish delicacy. Haggis remains illegal under federal law. It's a good week for an unnamed 79-year-old man who Stat News reported was granted special access to an experimental anti-obesity drug after filing an application that drew the interest of top health officials. The White House denied that Trump, who turned 80 this month, was the patient. But it was a bad week for housekeeping. after the New York Times' Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan reported that White House staff have taken to monitoring the president's trash, where they often find pieces of the residence's sterling silver cutlery nestled among the empty potato chip bags, Starbucks wrappers, and ice cream cartons. It's a bad week for ups and downs after British police announced they are working to identify a couple who had sex in a Ferris wheel pod at the recent Download Rock Festival in Leicestershire. All I can say is they thought the glass was tinted, said a witness, but it wasn't at all. Finally, it's a bad week for legacies after fewer than 400 babies were named Donald last year, the lowest number since records began. Donald is now the nation's 690th most popular name, according to Social Security Administration data, down more than 200 places since Trump was first elected in 2016. And in other news, judge rules that Trump's citizen database is unlawful. A federal judge this week blocked the Trump administration from using a new national database of citizens that was central to its effort to purge purported non-citizens from voter rolls. President Trump last year ordered several agencies to pull together information about U.S. residents, including their immigration and Social Security records, which states could then search to verify citizenship and determine voting eligibility. U.S. District Judge Sparkle Suknanan said Homeland Security officials knew the so-called SAVE database wrongfully identified some citizens as non-citizens, but continued to pass that information to states, resulting in some naturalized Americans having their voter registrations canceled. The federal government has knowingly trampled on the privacy rights of American citizens, Suknanan said. This court cannot stand idly by while that happens. The government can appeal the ruling. The title of this week's briefing is America's Contentious Birthday. President Trump has taken personal control of the nation's 250th, turning it into a partisan celebration. What festivities are planned? The 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence is being celebrated with a series of magnified gatherings, concerts, and competitions. Many of them have an overtly partisan component. The first event was a night of ultimate fighting championship bouts staged on the White House lawn, specifically to coincide with Trump's 80th birthday. The next, the Great American State Fair, which runs on the National Mall for 2 weeks, was supposed to include stands from every U.S. state and territory. But at least 7 states, 6 of them with Democratic governors, pulled out, citing cost and politics, after it became clear that the event would feature Republican themes like Make America Healthy Again Monday and the participation of conservative groups such as Moms for America. This event is a more partisan affair than originally presented, said Oregon Governor Tina Kotick, through a spokesman. The pro-Trump vibe was also caused the cancellation of a planned June 25 kickoff concert after country singer Martina McBride, rapper Young MC, and bands including Morris Day and The Time and the Commodores all bowed out for political reasons. Trump said he would open the state fair with one of his political rallies instead, adding that he'd make July 4th the most spectacular Trump rally of them all. Was this the original plan? No. In 2016, Congress authorized a bipartisan nonprofit known as America 250 to organize America's milestone birthday. inspired by the 1976 bicentennial, a widely praised extravaganza featuring 12 weeks of festivals on the Mall, events in every state, and the opening of the Air and Space Museum, the group said it hoped to educate, engage, and unite Americans with programs across the country that would present and celebrate our history. So far, it has organized events such as a July 4th benefit concert in Los Angeles, featuring Smashing Pumpkins and Queen Latifah, a succession of ball drops in New York City's Times Square for each U.S. time zone on July 3rd, and the burying in Philadelphia of a huge time capsule to be opened in 2276. But it's not very well funded. For the bicentennial, Congress had spent the equivalent of $900 million in today's dollars. For this celebration, it has given less, some $80 million total between 2019 and 2025. While another $150 million was allocated in last year's giant budget bill to top up the funds, the bulk of that money doesn't go to America 250, but to a rival group, Freedom 250. What is Freedom 250? It's the Trump-chaired White House task force behind the UFC fight and the fair. Created by one of Trump's early executive orders specifically to take the place of the bipartisan American 250, Freedom 250 consists entirely of Republicans, nearly all white men. Vice President J.D. Vance serves as vice chair, and most cabinet members are on the task force. Over a quarter of the partners listed on Freedom 250's website are Christian groups or have Christian affiliations, although it also has connections with firms such as John Deere and Northrop Grumman. Freedom 250 says its mission includes inviting Americans to pray for our country and our people and rededicate ourselves as one nation under God. Both groups are running events. How do the two groups differ? Democrats call Freedom 250 a Trump vanity project, saying it promotes a revisionist, overly sanitized version of American history. Freedom 250 materials for a student art contest, for instance, describe Martin Luther King Jr. as having a can-do attitude, but don't mention that he fought segregation. But the Trump administration said it had to create its own task force because America 250 placed too much emphasis on the darker aspects of American history, like slavery and discrimination. Chris LaCivita, a former Trump campaign manager, even accused the commission of wanting to apologize for the past 250 years. Meanwhile, the two sides are now squabbling over funding. America 250 was supposed to get $50 million of the celebration money Congress allocated last year. As of June, though, the Interior Department had transferred only half of that. Why the holdup? The administration says America 250 has overspent on frivolous, poorly attended events. It points to the America's Field Trip Initiative, an essay contest whose winners get trips to historic sites, which is costing an estimated $10.4 million. Yet the White House has also raised eyebrows with its spending. The Interior Department has splashed out $98 million to spruce up Washington, D.C. for the celebrations, gilding horse statues and repainting the reflecting pool. The huge triumphal arch that Trump wants to build will cost another $100 million, at least. Plus, there are allegations of corruption. Senator Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, launched a probe into whether the White House was running a pay-to-play scheme by giving wealthy Freedom 250 donors access to Trump. Are Americans excited to turn 250? Some are. Major concerts, festivals, and parades are expected to draw big crowds in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Richmond, Virginia, and Charleston, South Carolina. But Gallup found that while 84% of Americans over 65 plan to celebrate, the number drops to 66% for those aged 40 to 64, and just 54% for those 18 to 39. An NBC poll found the number of respondents who were extremely proud to be an American is at a record low of 33%, and 38% told Reuters Ipsos they don't believe the U.S. will be around for its 500th birthday. Some historians blame the apathy on the president. The carnival atmosphere of cage fights on the White House lawn and a concert that everyone seems to be backing out of tells you all you need to know, said historian James Rosenault. There is no serious look at the nation or its complicated history. And a few of the best columns of the week. First two come from the U.S. Most U.S. schools are not failing. It's become a widely accepted truism that U.S. public schools are an international embarrassment, said Freddie DeBoer. But it's simply not true. In the most recent international test of 15-year-olds in 81 nations, U.S. reading scores ranked higher than those of 68 other school systems, and 14% of U.S. students scored at the very highest level, double the average of other advanced nations. Science scores were also well above the international average, while in math, our worst subject, the U.S. was slightly above the middle of the pack. The reality is that our best students are the envy of the world and continue to dominate international math, physics, and science competitions. The American median student, meanwhile, does just fine. Unfortunately, it's disadvantaged students in low-income urban neighborhoods who drag down our averages and create the myth that most American schools are failing. Throwing more money at troubled districts hasn't made much difference because at home these students face conditions that no amount of teaching quality can overcome. These students' struggles are primarily the result of extreme poverty, structural racism, and lack of parental support, not bad teachers or unions. Nearly everywhere else, most American K-12 schools and students really are doing quite well. Taking food away from the hungriest. The poorest Americans are hungry, and they're about to get hungrier, said Catherine Rampell. Tariffs, inflation, and an immigration crackdown targeting agricultural workers have combined to make food more expensive. At the same time, the Trump administration has made deep cuts in programs that help people afford food. To help fund his tax cuts for the wealthy, Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill last year cut over $1 trillion in safety net programs, including the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, often called food stamps. The SNAP purge is already in full swing, with enrollment plummeting by 4.7 million people in just 8 months. Children are the biggest victims. At least 776,000 kids lost benefits in the 12 states that collect data by age. But the Trump administration is branding this horrifying outcome a success, depicting disenrolled SNAP recipients as lazy grifters. Under new rules, recipients must prove they're working at least 20 hours per week by providing lots of time-consuming paperwork. The resulting bureaucratic nightmare has succeeded in flooding state benefits offices with calls and visitors and forcing frustrated people and their children out of the program. Trump has created one big, beautiful hunger crisis. This column comes from Canada. Our beloved hockey night is dead. A piece of our country has been taken from us, said Bruce Arthur. Hockey night in Canada was the birthright of every Canadian for the past 75 years. It was in our DNA. On Saturday nights, we could turn on the TV and watch a professional hockey game for free on the CBC, our public broadcaster. If you grew up in Canada, you probably have a memory of sitting on your parents' or grandparents' couch to root for the Toronto Maple Leafs or Montreal Canadiens. Or if you were one of the few who didn't obsess about the national sport, to just enjoy hanging out with the family. For ages, it was the most watched show in the country. It connected every Canadian. But everything changed after Rogers Sportsnet, a Toronto-based media giant, bought the rights to the show to show NHL games in 2013. At first, it leased the rights back to the CBC at an exorbitant price, but the quality was slipping and the theme song was gone. Now hockey has left the CBC for good. The CBC couldn't agree on terms for a sublease from Rogers when the old lease ended in June. And from now on, Canadians who want to watch hockey have to pay for a cable or streaming subscription. Apparently, there's no room for nostalgia in this profit-driven world. Money colonizes everything. The last word, titled Great Expectations, that's spelled G-R-A-T-E. In the U.S. and Europe, teams of scientists are trying to solve a problem that has stumped researchers for years, said Sam Colbert in 1843. How to engineer a vegan cheese that's not gross. In an office block in South London, a chef was trying hard to prove that vegan cheese wasn't disgusting. VioLife, a brand that makes dairy-free products, had asked him to make a multi-course lunch to show off its cheese alternatives. The chef, Duncan Parsonage, served up a fake meat Cuban sandwich topped with gooey mock mozzarella, tortilla chips with whipped Greek white, a version of feta, and to top it off, a donut filled with imitation cream cheese. It was all tasty enough, but it was clear that the cheese needed dressing up. Even Parsonage confessed the products would struggle to hold their own on a cheese board. As vegans know, ersatz cheese can be waxy and bland, and nowhere near as good as the real thing. Several years ago, the vegan food craze was at its peak, propelled by wellness influencers and Netflix exposés of the meat industry, veganism became aspirational and lucrative. Venture capital and celebrity finance poured into firms such as Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, the latter of which boasted Bill Gates and Leonardo DiCaprio among early investors and went public in 2019 at nearly $4 billion. In 2021, Oatly, a Swedish oat milk firm backed by Oprah Winfrey, Jay-Z, and Natalie Portman, was valued around $13 billion. Its chief executive hailed the star's investment as a clear indication of where the world is heading. Food, like popular culture, was going woke. During the pandemic, however, it became clear that investors had overestimated consumers' appetite for vegan alternatives. Sales of plant-based meat and milk have since stalled, weighed down by higher prices and growing suspicion of ultra-processed foods. Beyond Meat is now worth less than $400 million, and Oatly has lost 97% of its peak value. Still, many products from the vegan food revolution remain widely available. Plant-based milk accounted for 13% of American milk sales last year, but vegan cheese is not among them. It makes up less than 1% of the American cheese market, and sales were 10% lower at the end of 2025 than a year earlier. Why is vegan cheese so disappointing? The answer can be found under a microscope. Milk consists of two proteins, whey and casein. Cassian is what makes cheese cheesy. It makes it stretchy when melted and releases enzymes that produce complex flavors. Plant proteins can't replicate this behavior. They are more rigid and don't bind fat and calcium in the same way. Companies like VioLife have attempted to sidestep the casein problem by using coconut oil and tapioca starch to replicate some of the cheese's distinctive properties. Parsonage Domi vegan cheese is best enjoyed as an ingredient on a burger or pizza. Even then, texture is a problem. Shreds of VioLife blocks lock up under the direct heat in a pizza oven, softening around the edges but refusing to melt. Its fake Camembert comes with instructions. Don't bake it for as long as a real one, or it will turn into liquid rather than a gooey treat. Despite being plant-based, most vegan cheese isn't very nutritious either. It's high in saturated fat and contains almost no protein. It also doesn't taste of much apart from coconut. In theory, any taste can be mimicked with the right combination of synthetic flavors. But recreating the notes of a ripened cheddar is prohibitively expensive. There is an obvious solution. Make Cassian without a cow. A handful of scientists and entrepreneurs are using a process called precision fermentation, which involves genetically modifying microorganisms to make them break down sugars in a specific way to do just this. At Wageningen University in the Netherlands, scientists have isolated the DNA sequence in cows that produces casein. They stick it into E. coli bacteria, give the bacteria glucose to feed on, and caseins get left behind. They are then mixed with oil and water to make a kind of mozzarella. It's more similar to the animal product, Julia Kepler, one of the scientists, told me. Though, of course, we haven't tasted it yet. Under EU law, precision fermented cheese is classified as a novel food and must receive approval before it can be marketed to consumers, a process that can take years. The EU doesn't explicitly ban scientists from tasting such food, but most countries take a cautious approach, treating any human consumption as off-limits until approval is granted. Precision fermentation is expensive, and it's unlikely cheese created this way could ever compete on cost with real cheese. For now, the researchers are trying to prove only that the technology works. They test the physical performance of samples against real cheese, measuring density, melting temperature, and stretch length. Kepler insisted she's never sneaked a bite. Previously, she spent 4 years working on precision fermented milk before she was allowed to try some. That was at a conference in America where regulations are more relaxed. People are consuming it there, she said, and they've survived. It is no surprise that California has become a breeding ground for alternative proteins. Its tech, research, and wellness industries are fueled by abundant venture capital and lack of red tape, at least compared with Europe. Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods both emerged from this ecosystem, alongside a lesser-known company called Climax Foods. Its founder, Oliver Zahn, had been a data scientist at Google, and before that at SpaceX and Impossible Foods. He grew up in Germany and had come to America for postgraduate studies in astrophysics, eventually serving as director of the Center of Cosmological Physics at the University of California, Berkeley. But although he enjoyed decoding the mysteries of space, he was increasingly distracted by another problem of cosmic proportions: how to make vegan cheese taste good. In 2019, he founded Climax, which he said would fix vegan cheese in the same way he'd approached astrophysics, by making sense of complex data. Climax pitched itself as the kind of food maker only Silicon Valley could produce. It was a data science company innovating the future of food, according to its website. The company boasted that its scientists would develop plant-based cheeses through sophisticated machine intelligence tools, including using AI to predict what would happen when a recipe was tweaked. Zahn raised $7.5 million in seed funding and began recruiting through his industry context. He and his new team would do the hard thing first, specialty cheeses. This was a strategy Zahn had picked up from Elon Musk when he worked at SpaceX. If you can make the fanciest, most difficult car to get right, do that really well, you can hopefully do all the other things really well, Zahn told me. Zahn's team set to work on a full slate of cheese varieties, including brie and goat cheese. Instead of relying on the usual oil and starch, they built the recipes around seeds and legumes. These ingredients were far more nutritious, but they were also expensive. A handful of companies had made nut and seed-based cheeses, but their products were priced high and hard to find. Zahn, however, was confident his team could perfect the taste and bring costs down later. Soon they had something to show for their efforts. Climax Blue, a wheel of imitation blue cheese. It looked impressive. Ripples of mold ran through a creamy base of blended seeds, beans, and coconut cream. While his team worked back at the lab in Berkeley, Zahn spent more and more time on the road, showing off Climax Blue. He appeared at food expos and met star chefs, promising zero-compromise vegan alternatives. At one point, he flew to London for a private tasting with Paul McCartney, who became an investor. Zahn loved watching the delight of people who tried his cheese for the first time. "I wish you could have filmed their faces," he told me. In a way, blue cheese has been relatively easy to get right. Its most important quality, taste, could be replicated using the same mold. The real challenge lay with more popular varieties like mozzarella, where physical properties like melt and stretch were paramount. To get those right, Climax would need to confront the casein problem. In April 2022, Zahn was in a meeting when he got a text from one of his staff telling him to come to the lab right away. One of the scientists there had been working on an analog to mozzarella. He'd accidentally overheated the sample, thinking he was setting the oven temperature in Fahrenheit when it was programmed in Celsius. Under the high heat, his sample did something that, up to that point, had seemed near impossible for food made with plant proteins. It melted and stretched, just like real cheese. Zahn became emotional. We knew immediately we had hit the jackpot. Climax had cracked it. They called the ingredient casein. It would not only make a stretchier cheese, but one higher in protein than existing vegan cheeses. The process needed fine-tuning and was expensive. But with a $60 million investment promised by a London tech fund, they would surely have enough runway to figure it out. By the middle of 2022, however, the heyday for plant-based foods appeared to be ending. Over the previous year, Beyond Meat had lost nearly 85% of its value. Investors had been treating food like it was software, which can be scaled and sold with a click of a button. But increasing supply of a food product means building more production capacity, and margins were slim, especially given the need to compete with meat and dairy on cost. The London Fund pulled out. Despite the setback, things appeared to be going well for Climax. By the end of 2023, more than 15 restaurants, among them renowned Atelier Crin in San Francisco and 11 Madison Park in New York, had included Climax Blue in their dishes. And in April 2023, Bell Group, the French makers of Babybel and Boursin, announced that it would be working with Climax to make vegan versions of its products using casein. A joint press release talked of leveraging the power of data science and artificial intelligence to create nutritious and affordable cheeses that would be indistinguishable from their dairy counterparts. But behind the scenes, the company was struggling to raise money and was laying off staff. By the end of the year, Climax was down to a handful of employees. The Bell Products rollout, promised for the end of 2024, never happened. I spoke to some former employees who told me that even as financing dwindled, it felt like Zahn was trying to do too many things at once. One former staffer said the team was in a civil war about which direction to pursue. Fine cheeses such as Blue had impressed investors, but crowd pleasers such as mozzarella were more likely to sustain the business. There was still some interest from investors. In October, a fund called S2G Ventures led a $6.5 million round, but with one condition, that Zahn step down as chief executive. Sandeep Patel, a former investment banker who'd been advising Climax, would become CEO, with Zahn shifting to a less business-facing role. The company rebranded. Climax Foods would now be known as Bhutani Foods. When I spoke to Patel over a video call in October, I asked him why the name had changed. "I think you can answer that question yourself," he said. When pressed, he admitted he thought the name sounded too sexual. "We've been at conferences where people come up and say, 'What are you working on, a Viagra replacement?'" The firm decided to stop production of Climax Blue and focus on more popular cheeses such as feta and mozzarella. Eventually, Zahn left the company completely. "I'm not at liberty to discuss," Patel said when I asked him why Zahn had left, "but it wasn't the right fit." Last summer, Zahn was on a cycling holiday in the Bavarian Alps with his son when he flipped over his handlebars and landed on his head. He fractured vertebrae in his neck, but mercifully avoided paralysis. When I spoke to him again in October, he said he was focused on getting better and planning his next steps, including a new AI-related venture. He wouldn't tell me anything about it, only that it will enable humans and AI to discover together. Vegan cheese, meanwhile, is still waiting for its oat milk moment. Costs remain the biggest hurdle. Cassid's patent was approved last year, but it is still expensive to make. So using it as a substitute for milk protein would be challenging. One workaround, according to one of former Climax employee, may be to use small amounts of Cassid to give an edge to conventional oil and starch formulations. Before I left the Wenningen campus in the Netherlands, the lab team invited me to see if it's not quite mozzarella for myself. They popped a few pieces out of a silicon ice cube tray and onto a table. It's off-white, lightly shiny. I picked it up, and it started to soften between my fingertips. It didn't really smell of anything, but it felt decidedly squishy, just as mozzarella should. This was adapted from an article originally published in 1843. Here's one of the health and science pieces. Mapping the fungi beneath our feet. If you laid out the thread-like filaments of the fungi living in the world's soil end to end, they would stretch for 68 quadrillion miles, some 730 million times the distance from the Earth to the Sun. That staggering figure comes from a new study that, for the first time, has tried to map and measure the planet's vast underground network of arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. About 70% of all plants have a symbiotic relationship with this fungus, which latches onto roots with filaments known as hyphae. These hyphae, which can be a 20th of the width of a human hair, ferry nutrients and water to the plant, and in exchange receive carbon. To track these microscopic threads, the researchers developed an imaging robot to analyze hyphae in more than 16,000 soil cores from ecosystems around the world, then used machine learning to estimate the density of arbuscular mycorrhizal networks in every ecosystem on Earth. The researchers found that together the hyphae hold some 300 megatons of carbon, about 11% of the carbon dioxide that humans pump into the atmosphere each year. The densest webs lie beneath grasslands, which draw far less conservation attention than forest, despite acting as major carbon sinks. The hope is that the map will steer land managers toward protecting not just plants and trees, but also the unseen fungal networks below the soil. Once they're gone, co-author Toby Kiers of Beards University Amsterdam tells the New York Times, they're very hard to bring back. Over on the Talking Points page, we have an article, Pride Night, When Baseball Players Object. When the San Francisco Giants recently held Pride Night, said Hannah Kaiser in CNN.com, three of the team's pitchers decided to make a culture war statement. J.T. Brubaker, Landon Roop, and Ryan Walker scribbled the numbers of Bible verses next to the rainbow-colored logo on their themed caps to protest the celebration of the Bay Area's large LGBTQ+ community. The three Christian pitchers could have simply opted not to wear the rainbow cap, as a fourth Giants pitcher chose to do, but instead they decided to express their religious beliefs about homosexuality. Major League Baseball issued a mild warning that the players had violated a rule against personally modifying on-field attire without prior approval, saying its reminder had absolutely nothing to do with the content of the message. Still, MLB's response sparked outrage on the right. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, accused the league of religious discrimination, and the Justice Department opened a civil rights investigation. Trump won, claimed Vice President J.D. Vance. We don't have to do this anymore. Tell that to the hypocritical left, said Beckett Adams in National Review. Sports writers and progressives promptly portrayed the pitchers as villains. But it wasn't long ago that another San Francisco athlete, former 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick, refused to stand for the national anthem to protest police brutality against black men. His demonstration was far more conspicuous than what the three Giants did. For expressing his views, Kaepernick was celebrated as a civil rights hero. Actually, said Scott Osler in the San Francisco Standard, Kaepernick paid dearly for kneeling during the anthem. He was vilified by conservatives and blackballed from the NFL at age 29, ending his career. That was wrong, just as it would be wrong to punish these baseball players for their peaceful protest. As a gay sports writer, I don't object to professional athletes showcasing their homophobia, said Jason Page in MS.now. It serves as a necessary reminder that the fight for acceptance isn't over. Just look at what's happening around the U.S., said Drew Atkins in USA Today. Polls show that support for LGBTQ+ rights is regressing after nearly two decades of growth. So far this year, nearly 800 anti-trans bills have been filed across 43 states. A 2025 report revealed that 1 in 10 LGBTQ youth attempted suicide. In Donald Trump's America, it is a frightening time to be openly queer. Okay, and a few of the short notes. Since March, the Trump administration has paid energy companies more than $2.6 billion to terminate leases for offshore wind farms that were signed during the Biden administration. This month, the Interior Department agreed to pay Chicago-based Invenergy $765 million to abandon four projects off California, New York, and Maine. A quarter of the players on U.S. Men's World Cup soccer team were born outside America, including Gio Reyna from U.K., Sergino Dest, Netherlands, and Alejandro Zendejas, Mexico. The team last week secured a spot in the tournament's knockout round. A flu outbreak at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas has sickened more than 200 airmen and trainees. 2 months after Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ended what he called an absurd annual flu vaccine requirement for troops. Since Hegseth's vaccine policy took effect, only 40% of Air Force trainees have opted to get a flu shot. On the poll watch, Barack Obama remains the most popular living ex-president. 57% of adults have a favorable opinion of him, including 96% of Democrats, 56% of independents, and 19% of Republicans. 34% of adults view President Trump favorably, while 30% have a favorable view of Joe Biden. And we will finish today's show with a quote from George Orwell. He says, "If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear." And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of The Week Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please join us again next time. I'm Fred Woodward, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The Week Magazine is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.